This is the MDT podcast.
A podcast for all healthcare professionals working with older adults. We are a multidisciplinary team educating about aging, MDT.
The MDT is brought to you by the Hearing Aid podcast team. We focus on a different topic each week to work with you to enhance your knowledge to help you look after older people.
Welcome to the MDT. My name is Ian Wilkinson.
And I'm Jo Preston.
And this week, we are going to be covering the thorny subject of dizziness.
Yes.
We are going to look at some of the mechanisms that contribute to balance mm-hmm. and how dizziness may be a symptom of when some of these go wrong.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk through some of the common causes of balance disorders in older people in a wider context around the dizziness that they might be experiencing.
And then we're just going to have a bit of a think about how some of the impact of dizziness on the older people that we look after.
The MDT podcast.
So we have some feedback. We have Leanne Owen, who is a physiotherapy on a frailty unit, who asked if we could send out colour copies of the infographics.
Which we'd love to be able to do, but unfortunately we can't. And we know that NHS hospitals are not flush with colour printers, but you can access them freely on the website.
Yeah, they are all on the website. You can download them, you can print them off.
You can email them to whoever you like.
Yeah. And we also welcome feedback on any previous episodes. And I don't think we've mentioned Dr. Tanya de Wyman as yet, who sent us in a great mnemonic for the 4AT test.
I really like this. I haven't heard of it.
Yeah. So if you remember, the 4AT test is the first bit of it is the four-question AMTS.
Mm-hmm.
And the mnemonic was PADI, which is P for place, A for age, D for date of birth, and Y for year. And the way that you remember it
is that your geriatrician will have a PADI if you don't ask those questions.
Yeah, so we like that.
I like that.
And we've had a couple of guesses for the MD teaser.
Mm.
The first guess was Lindsay McDonald, who guessed whether or not it was a ferule. And her reasoning for that, I can sort of see, but especially because apparently she had a spare one when she got her umbrella.
Which is mad.
Which is a bit mad, a bit intriguing. What sort of umbrella were you buying, Lindsay?
Guess. Yeah. Yep.
We also have a correct guess.
I know, I'm so annoyed about this. Like, I wish that I wasn't annoyed about this, but I am. So congratulations to Ryan Boyle, who his Twitter handle is at Neil's Club, and he got the MD teaser correctly 2 hours before we came in the studio today. So thanks a lot for that. It's given us loads of time to prepare the next one. So we're going to recap the clues and tell you what the answer was. So he correctly guessed that it is normally made of plastic, has no overall impact on the substrate for which it was intended. In other settings, it goes well with an umbrella. It is round, it is straight, but it can also be bent. Is, Ian?
It's a straw.
It was a straw.
Yeah.
Of course it was a straw. So congratulations to him. We will be sending you your MDT mug shortly.
The MDT podcast.
So faculty for this episode are Adam Buckler, pharmacist, Tracy CK, our occupational therapist, and Gagandeep Alg, who's a geriatrics registrar. So as ever, we're going to start with some comments from some MDT from our wards on what dizziness is to them.
I am a consultant cardiologist dealing with inpatient, outpatient cardiology patients. If a patient comes to me with a dizzy episode, I like to know exactly what the symptoms are and what triggers the symptoms, how long they've had the symptoms, and whether there are any other associated features with those symptoms. So, for example, someone comes to me with saying they feel dizzy. I have to ask them, does that make them feel as if they're about to pass out? Do they get sweaty? Do they feel unwell? Or is the episode just very transient? Whether there are any precipitating factors, for example, if they stand up, does that make them dizzy? If it has a dizzy episode occur whilst they're standing, does it happen in certain environments? Also looking at associated symptoms, so if they feel as if their heart is racing, that's quite important. Any other changes in their medical state that they've had?
I'm a physiotherapist in an acute ward, and we do get a lot of patients that have dizziness. Some of these patients come in with dizziness already, but however, sometimes they get it as a result of surgery. But those that get it post-surgery, they do find it actually difficult to mobilise. Now, one of the things that the dizziness does to them is that they lose their confidence. So patients aren't confident to get up. They have this fear of falling. Once the dizziness has been or is being treated medically, we start off by reassuring the patients. which is the first thing. We need to gain their confidence and gain their trust. So we reassure the patients. But then we also put like coping mechanisms in place. So we ensure that we have two people with us when we're mobilising the patients, because the more people we have, the more confident they feel.
So we can see that dizziness affects patients in many different ways, really.
Yeah.
And it means different things to different members, or it has implications, really, for different members of the team.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is, I know we keep saying this all the time, it's a really multidisciplinary process, but it really is. This one is, it's got so many inputs, and we'll talk through those. So many different aspects that can be looked at from so many different ways that affect not only the dizziness, but how you cope with that dizziness functionally.
And really, I think we should say up front that there's a distinction between balance and dizziness.
Yes.
Because they often get conflated together.
Yeah.
And dizziness is a term used to describe a range of sensations, yeah, such as feeling faint, woozy, weak or unsteady.
You love those words, don't you?
I do. And we'll come on to my love and my words later. And I think dizziness creates a false sense that you or your surroundings is spinning or moving. And we call that vertigo.
Mm. Whereas from the balance side of things, it's really the ability of that person to keep their body in the right position in space. So more specifically, the kind of centre of mass of your body within boundaries of space. So maintaining postural stability requires integration of lots of complex different inputs. So sensory inputs, it should then be processed by the brain, and then the actions are carried out to keep yourself upright. Mm. So that's the kind of wider process of keeping yourself upright that dizziness may impact.
And dizziness itself is really common.
Mm.
It's apparently the most common cause of primary care consultations in the USA.
Mm.
And it's obviously one of the main reasons why, well, one of the multiple of reasons of why people may fall over.
Yeah.
And we know that about a third of the population over the age of 65 will have a fall in any individual year,
yeah,
rising to about 50% of everyone over the age of 85. And some of those will be dizzy prior to their falling.
Yeah. So obviously we've done an episode on falls, so you can go back. So this is kind of bringing out one of those areas in a bit more detail to give you a bit more confidence and understanding of how to approach it. So as we said, balance is linked to gait and postural stability, but today we're going to focus on the dizziness aspect of it, and which is part of that balance system going wrong. So usually there's a mismatch between the vestibular systems, the inner ear, the visual systems, the eyes, and the somatosensory system. So that's your joint position sense and knowing where you are. And as we said before, dizziness is a symptom of something going wrong, not a diagnosis.
Yeah, and it's when really one part of the balance system is not working.
Mm.
And I think going through the components, as you said, there's the sensory side of the balance system, which is a mixture of the eyes, the vestibular function and the somatosensory.
Mm-hmm.
And they tell the brain where the body is in this 3D space. And the brain then processes that. So thinking about the inner ear, you've got the inner ear is made up of three semicircular canals, and they're like tubes, a bit like pipes, drain pipes, and on the inside of those are tiny little hairs, and they're filled full of fluid, the tubes. So as you move, the fluid moves through these tubes and stimulates all the hairs as it sort of washes past like a wave.
It's a bit like the X, Y and Z axis on a chart.
I always get the X, Y and Z axis the wrong way around. I find that super hard.
Ian's looking at me like, but that doesn't help me.
Yeah.
But it may help some of you to understand that kind of 3D aspect, like the sides of a cube, I guess. So it kind of tells you exactly where you are.
Yeah.
So each of them picks up a movement, sensation of movement in each direction.
Yes.
To help your brain,
and then each hair cell, when it is stimulated, sends a signal to the brain.
Mm-hmm.
And so when that works smoothly, when you turn your head in one direction, the fluid sloshes around that space and the nerve signals are sent to the brain and works out, oh, I've got 4 million from the left and only 2 million from the right, therefore I must be moving in this direction.
Yeah, absolutely. And then moving on, we've got the musculoskeletal side of things, so all your muscles and your joints. So the stability and the strength that you have there will affect your ability to execute what you need to do in response to that dizziness.
And then you've got the higher level neurological processes, which is really the brain that receives these inputs, processes them, and then executes a response.
Yes.
And dizziness is when some part of that neurological bit of that is not working.
Yes.
And I think first up, I should say that when talking to patients about feeling dizzy, I don't like the Z word. So I don't like dizzy as a word, or muzzy, or any of those words
but
that got
they're
said.
They're the words everyone will use.
They're the words that the patients use, yeah. But I think we should be unpicking them a little bit more.
Absolutely.
And we should be asking a little bit more and say, well, when you say dizzy, what do you mean?
Because it doesn't actually help you to work out and pick out what's going on. So you have to move past that, don't
exactly.
you?
Exactly, yeah. And
but
some
it's
patients
very difficult
will say,
for people to describe.
It is. Oh, it's super
you
hard.
You really do
yes.
have to help them through.
You do have to help them, yeah. And it does require perseverance. But it is, it's really important because some people mean, when they say dizzy, they mean one thing. And when other people say dizzy, they mean something completely different.
Yeah.
And you could go off thinking about inner ear problems when actually we're looking at a blood pressure problem if we don't get it right.
So we're going to start talking about the different types of reason that people might feel dizzy. And those are mainly kind of presyncope, vertigo, and then we're going to talk about some disequilibrium and some other kind of drug-related and other kind of things that surround or bring together all of those things. So starting with presyncope, because we're going to get over and done with quite quickly, because it's relatively straightforward, and we're not going to spend too much time on it here. So this is when you're not getting enough blood supply to your brain. So this is typically one of those areas where people do give the muzzy headedness thing because they don't really actually know how they're feeling because they've got reduced blood flow to the brain.
But it's that kind of feeling that you get just before you faint.
Yes, absolutely.
For those of you that have fainted.
So the common causes for this in older adults would be something like postural hypotension is quite common. So that's when your blood pressure drops when you stand up. So you're not getting enough blood supply to your brain. And the symptoms for that, as we said, can be quite nonspecific, but the history is relatively key with that. So it's always when they stand up or they've been standing
for a little
while.
Yeah. And the reason that they feel faint and the reason that they collapse is completely a physiological, evolutional response to the fact that they're not perfusing the brain, and it's much easier to perfuse the brain if you take gravity away. And so the idea is that you fall down.
Yeah.
And so you see people that run into problems when they're not able to fall down.
Yes.
And they remain hypotensive for a long time.
Yeah.
And presyncope and syncope is covered in good detail by the transient loss of consciousness guidance.
Yeah.
And we're not really going to go into it
no.
now.
And partly, as we've said before with one of the other episodes, it's because the management is the same as it is with younger adults predominantly. And the European Society of Cardiology have got great guidelines, as do NICE. So we're just going to reference you there if you want to know more about that. But any sign that people are having palpitations or chest pain or it sounds like it might be cardiac, refer them to a doctor for further assessment and management through that route. So moving on to vertigo, the main bit of today.
The main bit.
So vertigo can be peripheral or central in origin.
Yeah, and it's that feeling of movement, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the feeling of the room spinning or you spinning within the room.
Mm. You spinning or sometimes it's feeling as though you're on a ship, that kind of thing. So when we talk about peripheral and central, what we mean is it central as in the brain or is it peripheral just meaning anywhere outside the brain? So it doesn't have to be very far. But that's really peripheral. We're talking about things in the inner ear.
Yeah.
So things like vestibular neuronitis, labyrinthitis, benign positional vertigo. And they're not usually associated with neurological symptoms or signs other than some shaking of the eyes, sometimes with the benign positional vertigo. And that's because it's outside of the brain. Whereas the central causes tend to be more associated with some other neurological symptoms and signs indicating what's caused it. So either a stroke or MS or a tumour. And things that are pointed towards that way, again, you really want to have a medical review for.
Yeah, and you can think about that. So if we think of benign paroxysmal positional vertigo, in these patients, in the inner ear, in those semicircular canals with the fluid going through it and the hair cells on the inside, you get effectively like grit. And what happens is as that fluid sloshes around that, the grit sits on one of the hair cells and keeps that hair cell stimulated.
Even though you're not moving.
Even though you're not moving. So it tells the brain you're moving. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's why you feel, well, exactly that. You feel like you're moving when you're not.
Yes.
And so often they feel really sick. They may vomit. And there are a series of manoeuvres and things that you can do that will fix that problem.
We're just going to talk quickly through the differences between peripheral and central vertigo in the history, because I think that's quite key. And they're quite straightforward, actually, aren't they?
Mm.
So peripheral things tend to start quite suddenly. They tend to come and go. They tend to be at their worst when they come on and then wear off.
Yeah.
And the duration tends to be sort of minutes to hours at a time. Whereas with central causes, they tend to be a bit more slow onset, so a bit more insidious. The symptoms are continuously there. The intensity is relatively a bit milder and the symptoms are over sort of days to weeks. But I guess the caveat to that would be something like a stroke.
Like a cerebellar stroke that would start suddenly rather than insidiously. Mm. It would be continuous, but it would be more severe. But you would normally get associated clinical signs, so you get cerebellar signs as well.
And that's one of the key things of the central, is that you quite often have other neurological signs.
But I think the head impulse test is something that we can do that helps distinguish peripheral from central. And that's because there is a reflex, the vestibular ocular reflex, mm-hmm. which is the thing that keeps your eyes fixed on something you're looking at when you move your head. And you can test that reflex. And I'm not going to describe how to do it now, but there's a link in the show notes that's mm-hmm. got a really good article. And I'll put some links to some YouTube videos of people doing it.
Gotta love YouTube.
Yeah, it's brilliant. And it's a really useful test for people that come into contact with patients who have relatively sudden onset dizziness. Mm.
To try and work out which
to
one
try and
it
work
might
out, yeah.
be.
It's not 100%, but it's very good.
Yeah. So some of the other features that are there, just to finish up, are with peripheral lesions, as we've mentioned, it's because of a problem with the inner ear and the sensation of moving, is that movement influences it
quite
markedly.
Yeah, it makes
it a lot
worse. Yeah.
Where with central lesions tends not to. And if there's any deafness associated, it's more likely to be a peripheral lesion as well.
So moving on. Mm-hmm. Next bit I think to talk about is a little bit about disequilibrium.
Yeah.
And that's really kind of coming away from dizziness a little bit. Mm. And it's a problem with gait and walking. Mm-hmm. And you can really think about it as a lower level, a mid-level or a higher level problem.
I like these kinds of distinctions. They work for me in my simplistic brain.
So lower level is a problem with the sensory input, i.e. you don't know where the ground is. You can't feel the ground. Mm-hmm. So, for example, someone with a peripheral neuropathy.
Yeah.
So if their feet are numb, they can't feel the ground.
There's something outside of the central nervous system. So that could be a peripheral nerve, as you were just talking about, or it could be one of your musculoskeletal problems, so joint or muscle problems.
Yeah. Then mid-level is now within the brain. Mm-hmm. And normally, you know, for example, in the basal ganglia, so not in the higher cognitive centres. And an example there of a mid-level gait disorder would be something like Parkinson's disease or cerebellar ataxia, which is the gait that people have when they have problems with the cerebellum.
And so the key thing there is that there's a direct link between the structure and the problem that the person is having. Which moves us on to higher, which is people who have a kind of higher cognitive dysfunction. So we were talking in the falls episode about people having fear of falling, having quite a cautious gait. So it's a much more complex process of interpreting all the information and then acting on it.
Yeah.
And then finally, there's some other kind of, don't want to say non-specific causes, but some kind of areas to be aware of when we're looking at the whole picture.
Yeah, and patients who could be dizzy.
Yeah.
And, or describe themselves as being dizzy.
Yeah, so there are some psychological elements sometimes. So if people have anxiety, then they might describe feeling a bit dizzy or lightheaded, but that would be quite related to their sensation and how they're feeling. But drugs is a big area.
Yeah, and there's a nice article that we'll put a reference to in the show notes that showed that 62% of patients, of older patients who present with dizziness, have more than one cause, and that a third of them are on more than five or more medications.
Yeah. And it found that people who were dizzy for more than 2 weeks, about 44% of them could be attributed to two or three of the different subtypes that we were talking about. So presyncope was the commonest, and then vertigo, and then disequilibrium.
Yeah. And about a quarter of the people that went to their GP, they felt that the medication was at least contributing.
Yeah.
And the way that medication may contribute is if you think of something like prochlorperazine, this is a medication that we give quite commonly to people who have inner ear problems, like a labyrinthitis or a vestibular neuritis.
And that works really well acutely, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. But the way that it works is it dampens, or the way that I understand it works, is it dampens down the vestibular function. So that's great when your vestibular function is
going crazy. You should be doing all the things it's supposed
to do. But in 3 weeks' time, when your vestibular function has settled, it dampens down vestibular function.
Yeah.
And it makes you, it upsets your balance. And so it's really something that
then can actually be a cause of
can
dizziness
be a problem. Yeah,
down the line.
Yeah. So thinking about how we go on and treat the patients, and I think they split up nicely into the three groups that we've talked about.
Yeah.
So the first group we talked about was the presyncopal patients. So these patients that feel giddy or lightheaded with often a change in posture or with an arrhythmia, so a palpitation or something.
And Ian's clutching his chest there to show me where the heart is.
Forgotten. Yeah, just in case. And the treatment for that is to follow the syncope pathway.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's well, each hospital will have your own pathway, each community setting will have your own pathway, and just follow the pathway.
And then moving on to vertigo, so more of your sensation of the room spinning and things like that, there are a few key questions that you want to ask yourself that would sort of trigger referral to other people or specific investigations. So if there are neurological signs or you think they may have had a stroke, then they need an urgent medical review. And that usually,
and they need a scan of the brain.
Yeah, exactly. It involves a scan of the brain. So if it's not and it's quite positional, then it's quite likely to be something like benign positional vertigo. And there are some manoeuvres that you can do. And again, I'm sure YouTube will help you with this.
Yes.
And actually, there's a mini gem by the AEME guys who do a nice 7-minute presentation on how to do some of these manoeuvres for diagnosing and for treating benign positional vertigo. And as Ian was describing, you've got, if you've got a little bit of something in that canal, the manoeuvres, what they do is to try and actually just move it out so it's not causing that stimulation anymore. So that can be a really instant treatment for people.
And what are the two manoeuvres called, Joe?
Hallpike and Epley.
Yeah, that's one group. And the second group?
Samont, you've written
Samont,
here. But
yeah.
I've not heard of
Haven't
that.
Haven't you heard of it? Oh, you should look Samont. So Samont, I think, is for me, I think, is better because you can teach the patients to do it.
Okay.
And you can use it as part of their vestibular rehab.
Okay.
So the Hallpike and the Epley is something that you need to do, but Samont you can teach the patients to do. I think it's easier. It's not quite as good. It doesn't work as much, but patients can do it 5-6 times a day. They can do it into a pattern, and they can start to treat themselves a little bit more, empowers the patients a bit
more. There you go. We're all learning.
Yeah.
If there's some hearing loss associated or the eardrum looks abnormal, then getting a medical opinion as to see whether they need to see the ear, nose and throat team.
Yeah, because there could be something pressing on the vestibular nerve or something, an actual physical problem in the inner ear.
And then there's vestibular rehab for people who have got more chronic vestibular causes, which works really quite well, but it's quite niche, isn't it?
It is quite niche, and I think often it's quite difficult to access vestibular rehab, but the places certainly that I've worked that we've been able to access it well, it works super well.
Super
it's quite
well.
Intensive. Yeah, super well. And so if you are somebody that knows a lot about vestibular rehab, if you could point us in the direction of some good resources, then we'll pop them online and we'll add them to the show notes and get people to have a read of them.
And then finally, if it's in the kind of disequilibrium area, then treating the underlying problem that's there. So we talked about those kind of middle areas where it's a direct brain function that's causing something. That's going to have a very specific management. For the peripheral areas, considering strength and balance training, which has really good results, doesn't it? Generally, and that's something we'll probably cover in the future.
Yep. So I think that's everything that we wanted to talk about today.
Mm-hmm.
We've covered dizziness.
Mm-hmm.
We've covered about the fact that it could be presyncopal feelings.
Mm-hmm.
It could be vertigo or vertiginous feeling symptoms. Or it could be related to a more of a gait or a balance problem that we call disequilibrium.
Mm-hmm. Also, the importance of medications and medication review in people who are experiencing any of those symptoms, really, to try and optimise their symptoms. And we've talked through some of the simple first steps that you can take for investigating and managing these people.
So if you've got any comments on that episode, please do let us know. You can contact us via Twitter
at MDT_podcast
or
facebook.com/MDT podcast
or on our website, which is www.thehearingaidpodcast.org.uk.
The MDT podcast.
It's now time for the MDT teaser, our catchily titled MDT item guessing game. And this week, Joe is going to go first.
I am going to go first. I'm very excited about my clues this week. Are you ready?
Joe even tweeted about how good her clues were this week. So
I did.
Just a bit of pressure here.
They're really good. Okay. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay. First clue. This item is battery powered, but it works very slowly.
So battery powered but works very slowly. It's not a bladder scanner again, is it, Joe?
No, because we've already done that. Okay, second clue. It can be operated by anyone in the MDT, but the patient can also be taught to use it themselves.
Is it an electronic bed?
It is not. Third clue. It requires sitting balance.
Is it an electronic razor?
What do you mean by that?
Like a shaver?
No, it's not, I'm afraid.
Okay.
Okay, fourth clue. My favourite clue is the kind of clue you would come up with. One particular brand of this is named after the largest, one of the largest land mammals.
Sorry, I'm going to pause you there. You know these clues are meant to get easier as you go on, so that by the end, the idea is by the end we're meant to have guessed it.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
If you get it, then this one will be amazing.
Okay, go on.
So one brand of this is named after one of the largest land mammals in North America and Eastern Asia.
Is that a bear? That's a bear.
It's not, I'm afraid.
I haven't guessed yet. I have no idea.
That's kind of a guess.
I have no idea. Yeah.
Okay, the final clue is that it helps you to get up after the fall.
A hoist.
No, it's very similar to a hoist. It's an elk lifting cushion. You know, one of those
cushions
you blow them up. So they're battery operated, and what they do is they gradually blow up so that the person gradually raises up from the floor.
Have you ever seen one of them in use?
I have, actually.
Is this...
So they're really good. So they're a little bit more dignified than hoists and a bit less scary, especially if you've got cognitive impairment. And people can use them at home themselves and slowly raise themselves up from the floor. But that's why they need the sitting balance to be able to balance on top of it.
My go.
He's really annoyed.
Okay. Right, Joe.
Okay.
First clue. Every patient has one of these. Some patients have two or even three.
Okay, next clue.
Okay. Second clue is they are usually made from paper.
And every patient has one.
Yes.
Go on next. Okay.
The formula to calculate the frequency of use is 1 times the number of MDT members times the number of times the patient is seen by the MDT each day.
Can you say that again?
Yeah. It's 1 times the number of MDT members. Mm-hmm. Times the number of times a patient is seen each day by the MDT.
Like notes entries. Notes?
It's a set of notes.
Ah, that's quite a nice one.
Yeah. Gets easier as it goes down, unlike someone else's clues. And now we have one for you. So this is our MD teaser. This is going to progress over the next couple of weeks. And please send us any guesses that you have. This is an item that is used by the MDT.
Yes. So as bitter as we are that the last one was got today, we are going to try and keep this one fairly simple. So hopefully you'll be able to get it by the end of this series. And the first clue is it has a low friction surface.
So if you think you know what that might be, contact us. And on Twitter, it's hashtag MDteaser, or you can contact us through the website or on Facebook as well.
And the MDT will reconvene in 2 weeks' time with an episode, the final episode for this series, on rehabilitation potential.
Dr. Wilkinson has previously received funding from Astellas and UCB Pharmaceuticals for delivering educational activities. The MDT podcast is a hearing aid podcast's Big Things Media production. Additional music by Kevin MacLeod. This podcast has been made possible from a technology-enhanced learning grant from Health Education England, spreading education throughout Kent, Surrey and Sussex. For more information, visit thehearingaidpodcasts.org.uk.